Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, a new audio collage by Virtual Renderings. Well, it's new to me. Tales of the Green Path, it's called, and I hope you'll stay tuned. One interesting thing about getting old is this. You can see, from experience, that many once-accepted truths are in fact false. Things that once appeared so obvious and natural and inevitable that no one ever questioned them. In time, some of these assumptions were revealed as very questionable, dubious, or even downright false. You can also see that many of these false beliefs are perpetuated because they benefit certain powerful forces. The Fortune 500, for example. Survival of the fittest is the law of nature, for example. Capitalists love that one. Here are some truths that nobody questioned back in, say, 1960. Progress is inexorable, so life will always get better for everyone. Capitalism brings prosperity. The farthest planet in the solar system is Pluto. One of the largest dinosaurs was the green plant eater Brontosaurus. That and pterodactyls were my childhood favorites. Here's another. The purpose of the U.S. Armed Forces is to defend our country against attack. Finally, let us not forget this one. Plants do not think or feel or communicate or cooperate with each other. Imagine my dismay when science writers told me, just a couple of decades ago, that there is no planet Pluto, and that there was no dinosaur named Brontosaurus. During the Vietnam War, I had figured out on my own that the purpose of our armed forces was not to keep the communist slave masters from invading California. More recently, it became obvious to me that the natural world is not just a world of unending competition and conflict and strife. Not just nature red in tooth and claw. There's a good deal of that, to be sure, but there's also a tremendous amount of cooperation among species. Not just animal species, but among plants as well. Communication and cooperation both. Among plants. It turns out that the tree huggers are right. Who knew? Mariah Gilardin of TUC Radio put together a fascinating installment on the underground life in the forest. One of the two speakers was Suzanne Simard. She is not a tree-hugging, hippy-dip, self-proclaimed witch. Our next installment does feature one of them. But rather, Simard is professor of forest ecology at the University of British Columbia. A serious scientist, okay? On TUC, she discusses how trees in the forest are networked, interconnected in elaborate patterns under the forest floor, through a huge network of fungal roots called mycorrhizomes. Through this network, the trees appear to exchange information in the form of various mineral nutrients and bacteria. Trees even appear to form agreements with one another. This year, since you need it, I'll pass on more nutrients to you through the network. Next year, we'll adjust the balance back. If serious forestry scientists say we need to take seriously plant intelligence and plant communication, and aging hippie tree huggers and 25-year-old junior witches are saying the same thing. Well, maybe it is time to take plant life more seriously. Maybe it's time to stop letting huge corporations manage our forests and control our food crops. Corporations that value nothing except cash profit to the stockholders. I've been browsing through the archive of audio collages by the elusive artist known as Virtual Renderings, Chaz K to his friends. Here's a very interesting one New World Notes has not previously broadcast. It's titled Tales of the Green Path. I began by talking about science, because it is a complement to the collage. The several voices who speak next are all countercultural, shall we say. Charles Eisenstein is prominent among them, for example. We have all been trained to dismiss such threats to the Dow Jones average as babble from naive hippie dips. So, let's keep in mind that a good deal of serious science corroborates these views. As Hamlet advised Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth than the propaganda they filled you with back in public school. Or words to that effect. I'll have to condense the collage a bit and present it both this week and next. Here is part one of Virtual Renderings, Tales of the Green Path.
I'm gonna tell you all about the plants, all of the parts and how they grow. Now just sit right down and enjoy the song. Your lesson starts right now, and here we go.
When you start questioning orthodoxy, then your whole life changes.
The roots form a stem, and the stem supports a plant. Oh, it sends nutrients to them all.
Medicine. As dreams are the healing songs from the wilderness of our unconscious, so wild animals, wild plants, wild landscapes are the healing dreams from the deep singing mind of the earth.
You know, it's, a weed is kind of like a racial epithet, a plant, you know, applied to the plant world. And there's a certain amount of bad press plants get that I'm not really sure that they deserve. I think a lot of it comes down to fear of the wild more than the genuine knowledge of the plant world itself.
Rushing is violence, and so is your silence when it's rooted in compliance. To stand firm in loving defiance, make art your alliance, give voice to the fire. Move people to the beat of the wind, gather yourself and begin to dance the song until it ends. We are winners, champions of the light, forming in numbers and might, keep the truth close in sight.
Once you get rid of your preconceptions, there's a lot of fascinating things that begin to emerge that seem almost obvious in themselves. One of the great environmentalists, John Muir, I think it was, that said, when you pull on one thing, you find it hitched to everything else in the universe. The real world doesn't really quite match the world that human beings or the fantasy that human beings have created about it.
Topic which not many of us think about. sterile world, wrapped up in our own creation. In fact, our regular lives consist of moving from one climate-controlled environment to the other. You and I have bodies and minds and fingers and toes perfectly adapted to the harshest, most vile climates, thus defied. We can survive in the Arctic, the desert, the swampland, and even in the most sterile place. We own the title of the most infectious species. We have literally claimed an entire planet as our own and are looking forward to claiming another. This is your heritage. The very presence encoded in your DNA. And what? What do we do with it? Sit in cubicles making money for somebody else? You've forgotten every cycle you used to know. The moon changes and children don't know what to call it. Instead of noticing different types of clouds in the sky, we determine between shoe brands, between TV channels. Is this the legacy we leave? It is a world that only we enjoy the fruits of, and that everything else on the planet suffers for. From our food, to our soil, to our air, to every other living thing on this planet. This civilization, this brave new world we've crafted for ourselves, does it make you happy? Do you find solace? Do you find hope? Do you find joy? Because last time I checked, depressions are at an all-time high. Meanwhile, it's been proven that just sticking your hands in dirt or staring at a natural image for 15 minutes can improve your mood, help cure depression. Yes, you've forgotten the natural world outside yourself. You've given it up.
Nature aims out where the desert cactus bloom. The stars shine as bright as the silver moon, and we're all the same. Nature aims.
Rationality tends to be based in a rational behavior, although there's not much of it, but let's go into the illusion for a minute. It's based on certain assumptions about the nature of reality, and if those assumptions are wrong, then no matter how rational the behavior on top of it, it's not going to turn out well.
Nature aids. It's time to see we've got no control. Neither these bodies nor these souls, and we're all the same. Nature aids.
People that live in close contact with the earth, I mean, you know, although the concept of witchcraft is fairly widely spread in cultures around the world, in general, there's a certain conception of witches as engaging in things that would harm other life forms, you know, other people in the community or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you sort of get rid of that concept and you look at it, this dynamic of people that live close to the earth and have this conception of everything as alive, each of them then sort of becomes a channel for some of that life force to flow through them into the human community. And no matter how much people in the Western world have tried to suppress that, it's not something that can be suppressed. It's exactly like weeds growing through a sidewalk. It keeps breaking through this sort of enforced, you know, monocentric rigidity and emerging of its own accord back into the human species. And those people have kept it alive, even though they've been marginalized as astrologers or tarot readers or herbalists or whatever. But there's something, that stuff remains, because it's one of the few accesses to soul that people in the Western cultures have. And at this point, it's starting to really break through that old rigidified framework and blossom everywhere. And so I tend to think of it as more, I like the term wise women are, you know, the people that are into simples, that it's got less of a edge to it than witches do. And
right.
Just my personal preference. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, I heard that translation of the Bible that says, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, the actual translation was, thou shalt not suffer a caster of evil spells to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a huge difference in the way it's interpreted at that point in time.
Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit, earth my body, water my blood. Air my breath and fire my spirit.
To the God of the wood, will you meet me in the thick wood, where the shadows shine and the sunlight falls so thin it leaves no record on the wind? Will you walk in the tall trees where the whispers walk, where I've heard you wail? Will the fury of a sudden breeze make your name a crazy call? In groves where light can never reach, will you become the sound of birds? And when my silence is my speech, will you remove my need for words? God of the woods with the laughing eyes, you are a world of pale stars and a purple sky beneath the wildness of the night. You are the tears of dead bards who whispered sadly when you smiled. You are my years of wasted words. So come and walk with me a while. Dark-haired, bright-eyed, drunken god, your hard face, your beast-like walk, our world has grown to need your grace. It is no longer time for talk. Though in your eyes there is no time, or world, or sight, but only space. Though hints of holy rage and crime distort the joy that lights your face, yet hearts are known by what they love, and peoples by the creed they serve. And this time, more than any time, should have the God that it deserves.
Simply by choosing to immerse oneself in the herbal world, one begins to, just by mere existence, run into conflict with the dominant reductive medicalistic paradigm that surrounds us every day of our lives. And that forces a lot of self-examination in and of itself. But to even go further, if you start to really experience the plant world as intelligent and alive and constantly adapting and innovating and moving, that there's this constant flow of communication and change running through the ecosystems all of the time, then it gets even more pronounced, because we are at a time that human beings have been through many times before, for various reasons, but we're at a point where one dominant paradigm is failing, it's ending, and a new one is beginning to emerge.
Sprites can go.
From the most scientific perspective at this point, that we know that plants feel, experience, and express. And when you get to a more subjective experience, even just growing a garden, you can see how different plants have different personalities and how they communicate with each other. You know, a lot of the more recent science stuff about how plants a lot of times aren't competing the way we thought they have been, but rather working in symbiosis through the bacteria in the roots and the soil and giving each other messages of, okay, you grow more, I'll grow less for this season, but next season I grow more and you grow less, and how so many plant relationships are, you know, very codependent, which is why a whole ecosystem is so important. And then when people come into that, I feel like often the plants are also trying to tell us things, and that to really understand that, we have to be more plugged in. I'm not talking about putting people personalities on plants necessarily. I'm not talking about little cartoon plants that talk to you like in, you know, kids' movies, but rather to appreciate their own kind of otherness of being alive and being sentient, but not necessarily like us.
Right.
And so if we can recognize that, then we can be open to a lot more of what they're communicating to us in different ways, through taste, through touch, through simple observation. I mean, if you've ever been to the Southwest in the middle of the summer and the heat's glaring down and it's frying everything around you, and then you go down to a river where there's cottonwoods growing and you lay under a cottonwood and the whole quality of the air changes. Mm. And all of a sudden everything's cooler and wetter and it has this amazingly sweet, relaxing smell. And of course there's scientific explanations for all of that, for all of the chemical process. But if we can lay there and think, you know, what's it telling me? What's this tree giving me? What kind of gift am I receiving? Then I think if we can look at it from that perspective, then we understand and can work with the plants on a whole different level.
I've been here 24 years now, and I'm just so impressed with how North American herbalism has not just been reborn, but created anew, not the old stuff come back. The old stuff came back and then flowered into something new. Mm-hmm. So we have Susan Weed type traditional herbalism. We have cutting edge medical herbalism as is going on in the Thai Sophia school. There's Rosemary Gladstar folk herbalism, which I think all Western herbalism herbalists need to be at home in that stuff before they get clever. Because clever herbalism is always weaker than traditional herbalism. I just off most of my friends by saying that. But unless we have that kitchen sink knowing about herbs in us, anything we try and get clever with, we miss the point. We end up blowing it the way the researchers keep blowing it when they're looking at herbs.
I believe in bending backward and extending my trap strip back into the messages and action. The art is feeding, stop stark the disbelieving, cause the garden holds the shards, the medicine is in the seeds. When we hold tight to our right to protect them, we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evident, the wolf, the hawk, the bear clan. We hold tight to our right to protect them. We know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evidence, the wolf, the hawk, the medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands.
Here we must pause. Virtual Renderings, Tales of the Green Path. Come back for part two next week. You will find links to the uncut version and also to 100-some other collages by Virtual Renderings on our website, namely newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, on behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening. Illegitimi non carborundum, good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are, and please tune in again next week. Till then.